pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, rags to riches, the self-made man. They're common phrases in American history. They're usually used in a positive way, virtues that help us find success. But our next guest says too much self-reliance has its downsides and that these ideas are at a toxic level in American society. In her new book, she makes the case that they limit our economy, our politics, our day-to-day lives. She calls for a more helpful future where we can be comfortable depending more on one another and, in some cases, the government. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the principle of self-reliance has gone too far, or do you like that this is a big part of the American ideal? If you have lived in the U.S. and elsewhere, how do you compare and contrast our ideas of self-reliance in the United States versus other places you might have lived? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Alyssa Quart is a journalist, poet, and author of books including Squeezed and Republic of Outsiders. She's executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. She collaborated with WPR's To the Best of Our Knowledge on a three-part series called Going for Broke. Her latest book is called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. She'll be at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison on April 11th. Alyssa, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, it's great to be here.
You've written a lot in the past about money, work, and how tough it can be to afford life in the U.S. for a variety of reasons. What led you now to tackle the idea of self-reliance?
Well, I've been running this organization, the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, which I created with the late, great Barbara Ehrenreich, for 10 years, which means I've gotten 10 years worth of letters and comments from people saying, you know, why are the people that you write about and the people who write for us, because some of our writers are working poor, why are they struggling so much? Why don't they own their house? Why do they own their house? Why don't they have a college education? Why do they have a college education? Kind of fault finding people for their own economic instability and poverty. You know, why do they have kids out of wedlock or, you know, without a husband? You know, why do they have kids with different men? You know, and there's a lot of blame and kind of moral finger pointing that I saw. And I wanted to know where that all came from.
You dug into this history. And one of the things you found is this idea of pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps that made it into the title of your book was actually originally kind of an absurd statement, a mocking statement. Some of the first examples, interestingly, in newspapers here in Wisconsin. Can you talk about the origin of that phrase?
Yeah, there was a farmer named Nimrod Murphy newspaper article was mocking him for that he wasn't going to be able to get over the Cumberland River or a barnyard fence, and they used the straps of his boot as a joke. And then later in the Racine Advocate, they said, you know, the governor must be trying to pull himself up by his bootstraps. And again, it was mocking somebody like, what a joke. Like you can't chew gum and walk at the same time or whatever. It was that kind of phrase. But over the decades, it became this reality. People were like, okay, I got to really do this. You know, people are taught in school now that they're supposed to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Somebody came up to me at an event and told me that he'd been taught that in school. So we've come a long way since it was a joke in Racine.
Then there's the frontier idea where, you know, people went out and homesteaded and settled and lived tough lives, which they did. The tough life part is pretty true, I think. But as you point out, they did it in one of the largest federal government giveaway programs ever. Can you talk about that that paradox of our frontier myth-making?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what inspired this was I was reading Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie and, you know, Plum Creek and all these other, which of course, you know, she was actually born in rural Wisconsin. So it's perfect. I'm talking to you about this in 1867, but her books were all extolling, you know, her Ma and Pa, we remember them, you know, Michael Landon in the 1980s TV show, 70s and 80s, doing it all by themselves, you know, planting their crops. As it turned out, when you look into this, first of all, Pa was a terrible farmer and he needed the help of his neighbors to, you know, feed his family. But second of all, they got money from the federal government through the Homestead Act of 1862. So this family got a parcel of land for free, and it was one of the biggest land giveaways in our country's history. And one of the pioneer mythologies, right, is I did it. We did it on our own. We arrived by this in this covered wagon. We chopped our own wood. We built our own house. That sure, that's true. But they also got the land for free. This is not happening now.
I'm going to skip over a bunch of history and look at the present day and the stories we tell about ourselves. And you say whether we're talking about politicians or a lot of people who might look self-made on the face of it, parts of the story, parts of the biography get left out. Could you talk about our, I guess, modern day myth making?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's somebody right now who's about to be indicted, Donald Trump, who would constantly say he was a self-made man and that his father was a Horatio Alger story. But it, obviously, I mean, he was raised with millions of dollars. He'd been given a $1 million loan, right, to start a business. And, you know, he was in a huge amount of debt also, and he kept borrowing money. So he was dependent on his creditors as well. And obviously, every single person who worked for the Trump organization, and at this point, these millions of voters who follow him, and Elon Musk similarly is sort of extols doing things by himself. You know, now he owns our big social media platform, Twitter. But you know, he also got money for his research and development from the federal government, and he also came from wealth. And so I just felt it was important to keep saying, not that there's something shameful about coming from wealth, but these people were born on second or third base. And so this assumption that we're all supposed to be able to be a tycoon or a titan or run for president or, you know, just survive easily is a lie.
Talking to Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in with your thoughts, experiences, or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Paul is with us in Northern Illinois. Paul, hi.
Hey, how you doing, Rob? Good to hear you.
Yeah, what did you want to tell us about, Paul?
So, in my early 20s, I was a floundering, panicky, angsty young man trying to sell stereos and TVs in a store and just trying to make my way. And, you know, in our system, afraid of sort of just poverty, I guess. And I moved to Denmark and I lived there for 16 years. And in my time there, the first thing they did when I landed was gave me a national health card. So I had free health care. And then I received a stipend until I got on my feet, which took me about a good 6 months to start being self-sufficient. And they would even supplement via aid if I needed it. My kid right now is going to college. It's paid for. Taxes are enormously high there, in our view. So if you're rich in America and you look at their tax base, you would say, this is crazy. However, when you think about how it's distributed, they don't have the angsty, panicky young people like I was. I'm extremely grateful for a social democracy, not a socialism, but social democracy.
Paul, thanks for sharing your experience. Alyssa, what do you think of his compare and contrast story there?
I love that. I mean, one thing that I found, I looked at volunteerism, you know, where people lend a helping hand, right? That's something that is always being extolled in this country and is supposed to replace the kind of social safety net the caller just mentioned. But in countries with the highest volunteerism rates, Denmark, as he said, Netherlands, Canada, New Zealand, they also have the strongest government supported safety net. It's not a zero sum game. You'll still be helping your fellow man and you'll still be, you know, creating mutual care systems in your social environment if you had a better social safety net. And also, I mean, look, if you look at the OECD numbers of industrialized nations, the US has one of the gives the least part of their GDP to daycare, at least one of the least to daycare or childcare for their citizens. And that's just another thing that there's no real reason why. And there's this idea that somehow people won't be taking care of themselves or being good citizens if they don't have a social safety net.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to David now in New Richmond. David, hi.
Hi. Say, I would 100% agree there's nothing wrong with social safety net, but I would have to disagree kind of with the premise here. You know, my grandparents came from Germany and had nothing, and my grandfather apprenticed at the railroad and worked his butt off, became a shop manager, and my father apprenticed, became an expert in the rail industry, working at railroads, which were union-based. But here's something that my grandmother said. When my father ended up going with another railroad that went bankrupt, and he went out on his own as a businessman, and I was complaining that he was gone a lot, and this is what my grandmother said to me. There are people who let things happen, and there are people who make things happen. Which one are you going to be? Whether it's a job that you're trying to get better at or the business that he's trying to make, you have to make a decision in your life. What kind of person are you? Are you going to let things happen, or are you going to make things happen? That stuck with me the rest of my life.
David, thanks for the call. Alyssa, your thoughts?
Well, you know, it takes 10,000 hours to have mastery over a domain. It was one of the studies someone had done, and it's been proven over and over again that kind of hard work and effort and exertion is really how we become good at something. So the caller's right. It does take hard work, but it's not hard work alone. And that's just the point of this book, that it's gone into overdrive. I mean, yes, my grandparents were immigrants. They came from Poland, Hungary, Russia, and they didn't speak English when they arrived, and they became American citizens and, you know, sent me to college and money working in a shoe store. So I'm with the caller. I understand they work 6 hours, 6 days a week. But at the same time, right now, it's this kind of rise and grind mindset. Like if you go on TikTok or social media, you'll see you can they say things like 9 to 5 is for the weak, or you know, you have to have lots of side hustles. And it's a really frightening version of this hard work ideology that we live with, you know, that is not, it's not really supportable, because one of the things of the messaging is that you have to do lots of different things, which is not what your grandparents did or what my grandparents did, because that kind of dissipates your energy. But they're saying you got to, you know, work as a physical therapist and a personal trainer, and then you have to sell CBD, and then part of a multi-level marketing scheme. It's the variety and the number of things, that gigs that we're supposed to be working, and the lack of unionization for the work that we do have.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to journalist and author Alyssa Court about her latest book. It's called Bootstrapped: Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about self-reliance, how we talk about it, think about it, practice it here in the United States? Do you have ways in your family, your neighborhood, your group of friends where you depend on each other, rely on each other? Do you feel bad when you have to reach out for help, whether it's to a friend or family member or to a government program? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to journalist and author Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped: Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Alyssa, before we go back to our callers, I want to talk sort of about the emotional side of our attitudes toward help. I'll share a very, you know, story from my own household. I've been married a long time. When I'm sick, my wife takes care of me. When she's sick, I take care of her. Invariably, the sick one getting taken care of apologizes again and again. I'm sorry. I'm such a pain. I'm such a bother, blah, blah, blah. And the other one's like, shut up. That's what we're here for. Why do we feel so ashamed, maybe, or apologetic in those moments where we might need help, even though we know we're going to offer it the next time around?
That's so funny, because I think this is what the difference between the Midwest and sharp elbow New Yorkers. Because when I'm sick, I'm like, get me the orange juice. There's no apology. What I'm trying to develop in myself, and I want others to find in themselves, I call it the art of dependence, not just interdependence, dependence. And it's really hard to learn how to either take care of someone else, or be taken care of without apologizing, and to see it as an art and a craft and a skill, like something that we should be proud of. Like, usually we're ashamed of any dependence that we have, and independence is what we value. When kids, you know, climb on the monkey bars, we say, good, you're doing it by yourself. But, you know, the parts of children that are dependent and the parts of adults that are dependent are of value too. And so that's part of what I'm trying to do in this book. It's also a, I call it radical self-help. It's like to have more acceptance for ourselves when we are at our most vulnerable and needy, so we can also accept others when they're vulnerable and needy.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Heather is with us in Brookfield. Heather, hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Heather?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic because it brings me to a specific time in my life when I had just had twins. And it was interesting. I was in another state, and their state, my husband was a student and going through a master's program and working. And so we were on Medicaid, but under Medicaid, they did not even let me see an OB-GYN. They just had me see family medicine residents. The whole time I was pregnant with twins, and I didn't even see an actual OB-GYN until I had complications after the operation. And I remember standing in my apartment, and I had complications. I didn't understand them. I couldn't do the things that I used to be able to do. And my parents who were there to help me, who came from a rugged line of pioneers, and my dad went to Harvard. You know, they were hard workers and instilled that hardworking aspect in me, which I lived my whole life. But up until that point, I suddenly couldn't do the things I used to be able to do. And my dad said, Heather, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And I knew that I couldn't. Like, that was not possible.
Heather, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Alyssa, we can be self-reliant until sometimes we can't.
Yeah, I just found that very moving, Heather, because that was part of when I recognized dependence, or both my daughter's dependence on me and my dependence on others. When I was pregnant, I was at hyperemesis the whole time. I don't know if anyone has had that, but you're sick the whole time. It's what Kate Middleton had. And you know, you become very dependent on people, something you're not used to when you're, you know, youngish. I was in my 30s, a woman. So the Medicaid story is heartbreaking that you didn't get adequate care. But I also think I'm glad that you had a voice inside yourself that said, I can't do this alone. I need more than this. And that's part of it. I mean, we can try to find the resources, try to develop them both politically, economically, and in our neighborhoods, you know, within doing it ourselves. But we also have to have that voice inside ourselves saying it's okay to need it. So thank you for sharing that.
Heather, thanks a lot for calling in, talking to Alyssa Court about her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. Alyssa, you conclude your book offering some advice. There's going to be a lot of policy debates about what state and federal government might do. But you also offer suggestions about how people can build communities where people help each other. Can you share some of the practical advice you give in the book?
Yeah, so I went on a journey, really. It was during the pandemic, and I went on a journey to find alternative American dreams. And I did find them. I found them in the ways that people were organizing businesses, something called worker co-ops, where the workers own their own labor. They own their companies or the nonprofits that they work for. And I interviewed many people who belong to those. I talked to people who were part of mutual aids. I'm sure in Madison and other parts of Wisconsin, you guys had that, but during the pandemic, where people delivered food to their ailing neighbors, and it was reciprocal. It's not a charity. You may give food one day or pharmaceuticals one day, and the next day you receive it. Other forms like participatory budgeting, where citizens help decide city budgets and they sit in on meetings. Again, it's a voluntary thing. And also kind of therapy that was interesting, because right now we have a epidemic of anxiety and depression. And this was kind of mutual care therapy that was peer-to-peer therapy, where people would talk about their economic struggles, sort of like what Heather just did, as part of the therapy. And I found that very beautiful. I came up with a name for it, inequality therapy. But these are just a few of the fixes that I found, new American dreams that I found.
Do you have thoughts for us to do kind of, I don't know, maybe a self-reliance gut check and inventory to see, hey, yeah, these are ways I can be totally self-reliant, and that's cool. These are ways where maybe I should let some help into my life.
Yeah, that's sort of what I've been trying to do. And when I've been talking to people about this, and I mean, one thing that I've done is to try to find the sources of my own strength or happiness or achievement, think about who was behind them and sort of attribute. That's become my mantra. Rather than gratitude, I think about attribution. So, you know, the people I work with at the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, my mom, my grandparents, you know, my daughter. Just all the people like you, the people that I worked with in Wisconsin, you know, that really shaped me, changed my life, teachers I've had. And that's just, it's been nice to think about creative output or work output as a collective thing rather than just done by oneself. It makes it more meaningful, really.
Alyssa, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Alyssa Court, journalist and executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. She's going to be at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison. That's coming up on April 11th, talking with WPR's own Shannon Henry Kleiber. You can also hear the work she did with, to the best of our knowledge, on the three-part series Going for Broke. We've got a link up at WPR.org/Central Time. Plus, if you need information about changes in Badger Care Plus, we've got a couple links up there alongside that one.